What's up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about finding and testing out small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. But enough about the show. Let's get into our next game. Grindstone is the game for this week's episode. Grindstone is a 2019 puzzle game that was developed and published by Capybara Games. So the game initially released in September of 2019 on iOS and Mac through the Apple Arcade, but now it's pretty much available everywhere: PS4, PS5, Switch, PC, Xbox One, Series X and S. What drew me to the game initially was probably the visuals. It's definitely the first thing I saw, and if you were to look up the game, you would see clearly influences from like Rick and Morty, Gravity Falls, Futurama, kind of those colorful characters, especially the way that their mannerisms work, kind of their fidgets or their idiosyncrasies. It's very caricature-like. But the gameplay is a mashup of a game that we've talked about before, Iris and the Giant, where you're kind of in this turn-based scenario where you're lining up enemies to do different moves, maybe use particular items or what have you. But it's also interesting because it's a mashup with like matchmaking games, like a Candy Crush almost, but you are on the puzzle board. So you're trying to line up different color codes, but you're doing it with enemies and you're like attacking them. So really interesting. It's strategy-based and you're also collecting resources. You're crafting, and there's a lot of like endless challenge, like you can go to different arenas. So there's a lot to get out of this. There's a lot of depth, but it's also very pick up and play, and it certainly has sort of that mobile game feel, although I don't think it's completely like centered as a mobile game. I think it's a lot more than that. It released at a price point of $19.99. I got it on sale on PlayStation for $7.99. I think I got the PS5 version. And so I've been playing it on my PS5, but also on my PlayStation Portal. I think it's really perfect for that. And I've probably put in more than 6 hours, maybe close to seven. But in terms of time to beat, I think the site says maybe over 30, even just to beat it, but to do everything in the game, probably over like 45. This is definitely a pick up and play game, and maybe even a game that some people might not beat. The game has had physical releases through IM8-Bit, Switch standard release, and they also did a vinyl, which might be something that I'm interested in. But right now, through IM8-Bit, I think they're both sold out. But I think there's also a retail version because I did see it on Amazon. So those IM8-Bit versions, even the vinyl and the Switch release, I think were around $40. And I think you can see the same on Amazon, although it's not the same version. So the game was developed by Capybara Games, and they're a small Canadian team, and I think they've made a lot of similar small games, maybe not quite for mobile, but definitely PC-centric. Something called Battle Vision Network. I had heard that name before, but I don't think I've ever played it. However, they also developed the game Below, which is a game that I played before and I think talked about on one of our Tales and Sales episodes, where it's kind of like a roguelike survival game, but their perspective is like from the top down, like very far away. I hadn't really heard any buzz around this game. No one really recommended it to me. I hadn't heard it on any podcasts. It's really just something that popped up on sale, like a lot of games do for me. And so I decided to give it a shot.
Thank you.
let's talk gameplay for Grindstone. So like we said, this is a puzzle game, and there's really going to be two different scenarios that you're going to find yourself in. Either you're going to be in a puzzle, which is like a level, so you'll be in level doing your puzzling, or you're going to be out in sort of like an overworld screen where you're choosing different options or locations to visit. But everything is going to be kind of cursor style, or at least on console, like I'm just cycling through with the joystick for all the different places that I could possibly go. I think maybe on mobile it'll probably be off of a touchscreen, maybe a little easier there. But overall, I will say the game is not really like skill based. Nothing is timed. Like everything's turn based. You can honestly put the controller down at any point and the game will just sit there endlessly. But let's talk about when you're in the overworld. This is kind of like a level select screen, almost like Super Mario World or tons of games that have done it since. And so you're going to be able to select, I think on the right side, like different worlds that'll have successive levels when you go in them. And there is a main path that you'll have, which is just like the main dungeon, but it'll split off into multiple worlds that you can select from once you beat the levels within them. But as you beat levels and unlock the next world to go to, you'll also unlock a lot of other things, some side worlds to go to that are optional, maybe some challenge arenas. All those things will unlock as you progress through and beat levels in the game. And as you highlight over the different levels, they'll kind of have like the different things that you'll be able to collect in them, whether you got them or not. So you'll see little notifications up on the screen. There'll also be like an inn that you're going to go to constantly. And this will have like an armory, a tavern. It'll be split into different kind of sections on the screen of the inn. And here's where you're going to go back and heal if you get damaged in the levels. You'll be able to craft things. You'll be able to change your weapon loadout. You'll collect rewards for different challenges, all kinds of things like that. And then you'll have a section that's home. Some of the things I haven't quite unlocked yet, but you'll definitely be able to choose from the different characters you can use. I think it's like you and your mom or your grandmother. But there are like other challenges that are in there, like the daily challenge, I think, is in there. And as you get through different worlds and keep beating levels, more locations will unlock within some of these, as well as next to or outside of them. So you'll definitely get more options to explore as you progress through the game. Once you're in level, so this is where the puzzling aspect takes place. This is going to be kind of a turn-based game that you're playing. You're going to be undergoing turn-based attack sequences on a grid of enemies. And like I said initially, you're on the grid and it's almost like Candy Crush, like you would just have things falling down or different color things that you see, but your character is going to be on that grid and take up a space on that grid. And on your turn, what you're going to do is you're going to be moving directionally from the space that your character's on to kind of craft or to plan out the sequence of how your move is going to go. And every space that you step on is an enemy that you're going to attack. And every enemy takes place on the grid. So like I said, you're taking place on the grid, the enemies are, everything is on this grid, and you're planning your movement for how you're going to progress through and move around on the grid. So what's nice is you can move in the four cardinal directions, or you can move diagonally. So if you're on a space anywhere on the grid, there are eight potential spaces that you could move to from that. And the aim as you're doing this is to create longer chains that are killing a lot of enemies. And creating these chains, this is very much in the style of like a Candy Crush or any kind of match game, right? You want to connect a lot of different things, but it's based on how they currently lie. So you're not like moving some of the spaces to lock together. It's all based on how they currently lie in the grid. Now, what's interesting, the first thing that you'll notice is all the enemies are color-coded, much like a match game, and you can only chain together ones of the same color. So as you're plotting out your move, you're looking at all the ones that are around you, and if there's a blue one over here or a yellow one over here, you can choose one of them, but once you commit to that color, you won't be able to change to a different color. So you'll have to chain the same color for as long as you can go. Now, what's nice is it is turn-based, and as you're plotting out your move, you're not committing at all. So you don't have to worry that, like, oh, if I move the cursor onto that enemy, then I won't be able to change my course. Like, you'll always be able to change whatever you're doing before you kind of hit confirm or go. And if you chain together 10 or more, you'll get essentially gems that get released, and this is the main currency. But what's really nice is once you chain together and go to resolve that chain and kill all those enemies and move to your final spot, the gem will get released at a random point on the grid, and it'll actually take the place of an enemy, or it might take the place of an empty space, and it will count as a space. Now, gems and other things that you're going to find that are resources or collectibles will take space on the grid, and they will also count as a space in your sequence that will allow you to continue on. So for example, if you choose your path and you go to a blue enemy and then you do four in a row, and then there's a space that has a resource but no other blue enemies, you can jump to that resource space. And then from there, if there happened to be another blue enemy, you can continue on in your chain. So the different gems and resources are going to act as spaces on the grid that'll allow you to continue. Now, gems specifically are actually very special because if you step on a gem in your sequence, that will allow you to change to a different color if you want. So again, all of this is going to be planned out by you. It's not confirmed until you hit confirm. So you can definitely min-max your path that you're going on to really try to get the best chain. After you complete your sequence and confirm, it'll kill all the enemies that are in that row. And then essentially, it'll replenish from the top down. Again, much like any kind of matching game. So if you kill like a whole line of enemies, all of the ones that are above it are going to move down a space once you've confirmed and gone through your turn. So there's a little bit of strategy there of like what you want to move down or what you want to keep in its space to try and line up longer sequences. Also making sure that you are confirming what your final space is going to be, because that's where you're going to end up at the start of the next turn. Now, what I will say is levels can go on infinitely. Like, you can keep doing this sequence, you can keep killing enemies, but there are goals. So the main goal in every level pretty much is going to be to open the door at the top of the level. And I think it lines up with the three middle spaces at the top of the level. And this is going to get triggered by killing a certain number of enemies. So you might go into a level and it'll say like kill 10 enemies or kill 25 enemies. And so as you go around in your sequence, what you're going to find is as you're planning out your sequence and then you kill enemies, it's counting up how many spaces that you're killing enemies, and then that'll add to the total. So you're trying to get that max total of whatever it is at the level, 10 or 25 or 50 or whatever, but it's adding to it every turn that you take. So you kill a string of enemies and it'll add to the total. So you're trying to accrue enough to open up the door. There are other goals in these levels that you'll find that'll present themselves to you. So some of the first levels are just going to be, hey, kill enough enemies, open the door, and then leave the door. But as you get further on, you'll get other kind of collectathon things that you'll do in each level, similar to like a Crash Bandicoot, like you're trying to get all the gems or the crystals or whatever. So you'll have ones that are like open up a chest or like kill a special enemy that has a crown. And these are going to have specific requirements. So at a certain point, the chest will present itself. Once new enemies are populating, it'll drop from the top, and then a key will start to circle around one of the enemies, and basically you have to go kill the enemy that has the key, and that'll unlock the chest, and then you go over and you attack the chest to open it. Same thing with the special enemy that is holding the crown. You have to find a way to attack and kill that enemy. But that leads into some of the advanced things, because it's not just going to be, hey, kill the enemies and do whatever and go home and that's great and you beat the level. There are going to be a lot of different nuances for some of the things that you encounter. So one of the things is obstructions. So there are going to be obstructions in the level. Some of them are permanent, like rocks that just are going to stay there the whole level at that point in the grid and you can't pass through them. But other obstructions are going to be these things that can be demolished or can be taken down. And you'll see them plant themselves on the grid, and they'll have sort of like a red number in the bottom right corner. And what that red number means is that you need to get that many far in your sequence before you destroy this thing. So for example, you'll see like a broken crate that has a 3 in the bottom right. That means you need to start your sequence by going through 3 enemies at least before you get to the crate in order for you to demolish the crate and open up that space. Now, when you have these obstructions that have the red number, it's going to subtract from your sequence total. So remember, our level goal is to kill enemies and add to that total to open up the door. But if you're passing through 3 enemies and then you hit the crate that takes away 3, you'll complete that sequence. And then you'll break open that crate and then you'll have an extra space to move around in, but it's not going to add to your total for the level goal. So anything that has an obstruction that has a certain number that you can destroy it, it's going to take away from the sequence that's counted up in the path that you're planning out for that turn. Some of these obstructions are going to be objects that will release resources into the level, and others are just going to be tougher enemies that you have to find a particular way to kill. And one of the main things that you'll see that is more advanced, that's a bit interesting visually the first time you see it, is that some of the enemies will start to get the ability to attack you. Most of your advanced enemies will be able to do this, and for those advanced enemies, they'll attack all 8 squares around them. But the normal enemies, what happens is, eventually, if they're left on the board too long, they will become aggressive and be able to attack in the 4 cardinal directions around them. So sometimes if you're lingering in a level too long, like we did talk about it kind of being infinite, some of the normal enemies will start to get aggressive, and then you can't end your turn next to them without them hitting you. Once you get to some of the tougher levels, enemies will start on the grid as being aggressive, so you need to be aware of that. How the timing works, because it is turn-based, is you will do your sequence, and wherever you end up, if there are enemies around you that can attack you, they will attack you then, and they will do it in sequence. So, for example, if you're on a space where 3 enemies can attack, they will all attack you kind of rapid fire, 1, 2, 3. There is actually a way to toggle on and off to see all of the spaces that are going to be attacked on that turn. What it'll do is it'll show all the squares in sort of like a red hue. So if you're on a space that you're going to end your sequence on that has a red square around it, you're probably going to get attacked there. And it should be fairly obvious because the enemies kind of change animations when they're aggressive. But also, if in your sequence you happen to kill an enemy that would have attacked the space that you end up on, then you don't have to worry about it because that enemy will die. And as you're in levels, and of course once you complete them, you're going to get some rewards. So the gems are the things that we talked about. They are going to be the main currency in the game. So as you complete sequences of 10, they're going to get dropped onto the board, and you can pick them up in your sequence. If your sequences are higher, like 15 or 20 or 25, the gems will be bigger and they'll be worth more. But other resources you're going to find are wood, like if you break open crates, guts if you kill some of the tougher enemies, rocks that are like smaller gem-sized rocks of like boulders that you'll break up, and all kinds of things as you get further in the game. These resources that you can get will take up spaces on the grid once they're released from an enemy or an obstruction, and they can be used as spaces. But what's really nice is you don't have to go and collect them in your sequence before you leave in order to get them, because anything that is a resource that gets brought out onto the grid, as long as you leave and it's exposed on the grid, you will automatically collect it. So that's a nice little caveat there. Something else that you'll find are blueprints for the different equipment. These are things that often come in the different chests that you'll find. Also, when you kill a new enemy, it'll add to like a compendium page, which is one of the places in the inn that you'll go, and you'll be able to craft certain things there as well. So let's talk about your character. Your character will have health, you'll have 3 hearts, and each time an enemy hits you, it'll take away a heart. So if you land on a space that is going to have 3 enemies attacking you, you will die in that sequence, and you'll lose the level and have to start over. And we'll talk about dying in a second. But what is tough is if you take any damage in a level, it does not reset between levels. If you're losing a heart, you will have to go back to the tavern and drink one of the things, pay for it with your currency in order to regain that heart for the next level. I had a couple times where I forgot to go back to the tavern and I started a level with 1 heart, and it really kind of screwed me over there. So be aware of that. But your character will also have weapons or items that slot into 3 different slots. And these are 4 in-level use, and these will have charges. Some of the charges are permanent, meaning once you use it, you're going to have to find a way to recraft that charge. But a lot of the ones that you get early on will refresh every time you start a new level, which is very nice. And some of these are for defensive purposes. Some of them are for different attack functions. So some of the ones you'll get early on, like you'll get a shield that you can only use 1 charge per level. And basically what happens is you choose to toggle it on for a sequence, and at the end of the sequence, any hits that you take on that space you end up on will get blocked. So that's really nice, and it can definitely come in a pinch when you have nowhere else to go. But some of the other ones might be, before you take your turn, attack all enemies around the 8 square radius. So different things like that, and definitely some complex things as you get more advanced. But the blueprints that you might find in levels are going to be used to then go back to the inn and then craft with the specific resources that are required. So a lot of different things going on here. You're finding blueprints for different weapons or different things to use in level, but you're using the resources that you're picking up within the level to craft them. And you'll also be able to choose from different outfits. Each of these outfits will have a bonus feature. So the one that I'm using now is you're dressing up like Santa. And randomly, if you kill a certain number of enemies, I think, in a sequence, it'll drop like a present randomly on the grid. And anytime anything drops on the grid randomly, it could also kill an enemy. But then in the present, it'll be some kind of resource or something like that. So there are some really cool ones there. Some you'll get automatically, some that you'll have to find throughout, and some that you can craft with resources. And let's talk about pacing and accessibility. This game is littered with tutorials. Anytime you see anything new, you'll get a short little tutorial that'll explain the exact situation that you're in and answer the exact questions that you might have as you react to seeing it for the first time. I feel like most people might think this is overwhelming, but they're very short and sweet, and they're just like, hey, here's this new thing you've never seen. Here's how it's a little different. Good luck. So I really like that. I like the frequency of those, and I don't think that they're overly pandering or overly like trying to belabor an explanation. It's just like, hey, we know you know how to play. Here's this new thing, and here's how it's different. Go at it. I like the challenge level as you progress into the game. I think that it introduces a lot of things that you can craft and a lot of different types of enemies, but the real base way that you play the game does not change. And so I like that it's just adding all of the things that you've seen and then having them compound on each other to create a challenge that I think steadily increases just as more possibilities get introduced. I do feel that every level I've played has been manageable. Now, I know it's like a 30 plus hour game and I've only played, you know, maybe a fifth of that, but I do think that what I've seen so far, even if I've had an issue with a level and it's taken me multiple tries to like get all the collectibles, I never felt like this level is impossible or I need to plan every single second. I feel like every level's been manageable, and so I've liked the steady increase of challenge. There are probably about 200 levels total in this game, not all of them on the main path. Some of them I think were introduced as free DLC or those optional paths or worlds that got added. So I really like that there's no pressure, but you can always kind of jump into a different level. The worlds do have boss levels, and I think that's how they separate going from one world to the next. Like the first world, I think, had like maybe, I don't know, maybe 17 or even 20 levels. And the last one was a boss level, which was interesting and had a unique mechanic and a unique puzzle for how to beat it. Again, it threw in a tutorial that said like, hey, there's this thing. I wonder how we could do that. Again, not pandering, not spoon feeding, but certainly manageable and a nice kind of change of pace. We talked about losing all of your health. You can die in this game. Basically, what happens is you just exit the level and go back to the home screen immediately to the tavern where you can pay to get all your hearts back. I think that you lose all of the loot from that level. I don't think you lose any more, but you can potentially flee a level instead and not go through the sequence of dying, but I think you would lose the same loot, but you just don't have to exercise all of your items or whatever with the risk of dying still being there. And the game does autosave, which is nice. We talked about it being kind of pick up and play. Anytime that you're on the homeworld or the overworld screen, you can exit out and you're good to go. Let's talk about the vibe of Grindstone, and we'll start with the visuals, because that's what drew me in initially. This game is super colorful. Lots of strong blues and yellows and reds and greens, all kinds of things. Again, the comparison with Rick and Morty, Gravity Falls, Futurama, it has that cartoonish feel. The characters and the enemies are definitely caricatures. Like, they have big eyes, lots of movements and fidgets, some of them a little disturbing at times, just a little uncanny. The characters, like your main one, has blue skin. Like everybody is just colored a certain color. And certainly some of the enemies that you see, some of the monsters are kind of unique, strange designs. It almost reminds me of like the Rick and Morty episodes where they go to foreign planets or, you know, have all kinds of alien creatures and things like that. Them being color coded, very important. They're not just different color coded enemies that look the same. They are completely different forms. Like the yellow one is kind of like a bulb. The green one is kind of like it has like a mohawk or something like that. It's very obvious to discern them, which is very nice for someone like me who might struggle with some color blindness. But really, when they become irate, when they become agitated or aggressive, their movement, their fidgeting really changes. It's a stark visual shift. It reminds me a lot of like Nibbler, like, oh, Nibbler's so like cute and cuddly. And then when it's eating, like, oh, these giant fangs come out. But a lot of just over the top visual acting animations that I feel like add a lot to the game. As well as some of the things that you have, like the different costumes that you're wearing and their effects. You know, putting on the Santa outfit is really silly because your character is like this big, huge, kind of ogre-looking dude and he's wearing a little Santa hat. A lot of blood and gore in the game. And there's even a meter in the menu to turn up or down the blood. But a lot of enemies getting squished, exploding. You know, when your character runs through them, they'll slice them with the sword or the pickaxe or whatever. And I like how they just, like, kind of explode guts. But sometimes you'll see that what lands on the floor is actually, like, bits of candy or, like, blocks or children's toys. So I think that might change if you move up or down the blood meter. And the environments, you're going to have a lot of snowy mountain, so you're going to have white and blue, like a light blue, kind of that soft, frigid feeling. Buildings are going to be these cabins, and you'll see snow on the roofs, but then you'll see fires on the inside and, you know, the wood and kind of lit up in like an orange glow. The different obstructions, these are going to vary, but primarily just basic things like wood crates or boulders, because it is based in like mining. And of course, indicators are very important visually. So the number count is very in your face, like it stands out in the bottom right corner of different things or as you're going through and progressing through your sequence. Telegraphed enemy attacks, like I said, them getting pretty irate. And just overall, like where your cursor can move, like if you can move it to a space, like if you're not sure of, you know, what color you're on or something like that, like all you have to do is move it. And it going over or not going to a particular enemy is kind of self-correcting itself. Something else, like when your character is low on HP, he'll get super woozy. That's really helpful to remind you because you might not always look in the top left corner to see the hearts. The audio is really good in this game. Certainly the sound effects, like the different squishes when you kill enemies or dings when things are unlocked for the different indicators. So very good in terms of the audio sound effects. Love the music in this game. It's super dope. It has like this synth meets these beats. It's very chill at times. Other times it's fun and high energy. Definitely reminds me a lot of Dicey Dungeons, but not as chiptune-y. It's more smoother, almost like a lo-fi chill, like maybe even like an R&B at times. And I really like that. I also like the quick changes when you're in the overworld and you're going in the different buildings. Like it'll just snap into when you're in the tavern and all of a sudden it'll be playing this like chill vibe beat, but as soon as you leave it cuts out. But then when you go right back in, it continues where the song was. So little things like that. And I feel like that kind of bleeds into the discussion about themes and setting. I feel like there's a lot about this game that's very the way it is. It's matter-of-factly. It's nonchalant. Like there's gore and blood and that's how it is. The tutorials, it's like, hey, here's this new thing. Good luck. Or the NPCs in the shop and their dialogue. It's very kind of just plain and simple right in front. And I feel like it supports the vibe of, you know, maybe a little bit of how it's a mobile game or it seems like a mobile game. Like it's minimal commitment. You're in and out. It's saving at all times if you want to quit. Even when you go to your home on the overworld screen, like you can choose between yourself and I think your mom or your grandmom or whoever. The two characters, when you go into the house and you see them on the screen, they're just sitting there knitting. It's just something so simple and so quaint. And when you pick one of them, like they get up and they're all juiced. I like the presentation of the game and how it kind of embraces the format of it with the vibe that it's trying to come across with, which is like, hey, we know this is a pick up and play, jump in, jump out, pop in the tavern and pop out, and hey, the music will come back on. So little things like that kind of that synergy coming together. And of course, the setting. So you're mountain mining, like you're some kind of Viking or Neanderthal people, and you're on this mountain. This is where you live, and it's cold and it's snowy, and there's rocks and there's monsters, but you're just these big people, and you're going into the levels and you're just mining and you're getting resources. And it also takes a little bit of Norse mythology. Definitely, I can feel that. Some of the names of the characters, maybe even some of the symbolism. So all of that incorporated together, really nice vibe to the game. Again, it was a major draw for me. Let's wrap up the conversation about Grindstone. So for me, this is a good rinse and repeat game. Like I said, minimal commitment, easy pickup, put down, something that you can play in bed. I'm sure it's equally as good on the Switch, but I played it on the Portal. It feels like it might be a roguelike in that regard. Like it feels almost like a dicey dungeon. Like, oh, I'll just do another run. Like I'll jump in for another level. But it has that permanence. It has that progress. You're accruing resources. You're progressing through the main path or the main world and beating the levels in the critical path. But there's just something about it. I think it's simplicity in its concept and its gameplay that makes it so accessible. But what's interesting is as you dig even a little deeper, you'll see the intricacies of the challenge and how high that challenge ceiling can go and the depth of crafting things and different strategies of how to do moves or what weapons to take in. I really feel like you could get lost in this game. And that's a positive, I feel. You can sink in the time if you want to, but it's not a requirement. I might brand this as a glorified mobile game. I don't know. It definitely would fill the hole of like a matchmaking game or a Candy Crush. Often I feel like I'm critical of mobile games, but I feel like this also might be a game that could bridge the gap between someone who likes those matching games and is trying to maybe get into console gaming or PC gaming or something that's a little more involved and has a little more depth. Especially because I feel like its charm and its polish really set it apart from something that might just find its way on mobile and not be much more. In terms of value, I think $20 for an MSRP is pretty steep. I paid $8. I feel like that was great for me on sale. I think 10 to 15 is ideal for this game. Again, it seems one note. It seems like a mobile game, but under the surface, it has a lot of depth and a lot of challenge that someone can definitely get lost in. And I feel like lasting power is a big thing because you can pick it up whenever. And even if you haven't played this game in weeks or months, even you can pick it up and it's not like you'd be completely lost. You just dive into a level and instantly you know what's going on. And on top of that, it's got the music, it's got the vibe. This nonchalant nature, kind of acknowledging its place as a game with its vibe. And I feel like that humility or that self-awareness is something that sometimes we don't see in a lot of games. And so I do recommend this game. I think it's something that's worth having on the shelf for a rainy day or bedtime. So I highly recommend Grindstone. Check it out. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.